and welcome to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could be with us today. Well, if you have been following our social media, the name of today's program is The State of Beer. Yes, the state of beer. And here we are in North Carolina. It turns out we are in a perfectly well-positioned place to learn and talk about beer. I want to, before we jump into this rich content, I want to do a few shout-outs because it's housekeeping stuff. And everyone knows, get the housekeeping done first and we will have fun later on. Or at least, so I've been told. I want to tell you all, you have 5 days to celebrate Mother's Day. Hello, hello, people out there. You have 5 days. Tick, tick, tick. And Mother's Day isn't just about mothers. It's about aunties. It's about beloved older friends. It's about people whom you have sought out expertise and wisdom from. So don't define or limit yourself by what a mother is. On this celebratory holiday, I'm giving you a warning. Everyone, it's 5 days. 5 days. I could not go home without shouting out to our wonderful mothers and aunts. So the other point I wanted to bring up to you is this. We had a wonderful fundraiser last Thursday evening. Many people signed up. It was delightful. The way it worked out, we were at a movie spot called the Silver Spot in Chapel Hill. They couldn't have done a more beautiful and gracious host. I have to say that community and the activity and the engagement among a group of people who are supporting the radio, but they may not be hosts or DJs, is growing. And we're ever so thankful for that awareness. The last thing that happened is this. We had this radio show last week called The Lion's Roar, and it was a young woman who's been traveling on her bicycle across Scotland with a baby cello on her back. You know what? I am ever so grateful she joined us. Yes, we expected a ton of listeners from London and Oxford and people in the UK. But something else remarkable happened. The listeners in Andalusia, Spain, were on fire for that radio show. And in addition to this, we had people from Madrid. We had all of these Spaniards learning and listening from that program. So I welcome you to the show. We do our best to speak at a cadence that's appropriate for the South. So I've got my Southern ears on, and I suspect that might be part of the reason this is working. So I need to get through with this because I was looking forward to this program. I want to welcome two women who will be joining us on the program. The first half of the show, we will be speaking to our first guest, J. Nicole Beckham, an assistant professor at Randolph College in Central Virginia. She is an author, a blogger, and, of course, a beer maker. Now, some of you loyal fans, that cohort whom I adore, who never skips a Courage Cocktail, may recall J. Beckham, because she was part of our early panel of guests in 2012. It was show number 32. This is show number 159, just for the record. Later in the program, we are joining us, I should say, on tap is Anita Riley. I know that was a canned joke, forgive me, but Anita has been with us and she's been making beer now in North Carolina for a good long while. She is now working out of Mystery Brewing Company in Hillsboro, North Carolina, our hometown. And you're going to notice something distinct about this program after, as we start plowing through wonderful art of beer making, is that women are making beer. And so that's a topic that we're going to have some fun with. So without talking and doing any more housekeeping, I want to welcome you. Okay, J. Nicole Beckham. Dr. Beckham, welcome back to Courage Cocktail.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. I am thrilled to be here.
Oh, I love that radio voice you have. I have not forgotten that. So you're teaching up in Randolph College.
Yes.
What are you doing there?
You know, getting to know a lot of incredible colleagues and students. Most folks may not know Randolph College. It used to be Randolph-Macon Women's College, but we went co-ed about 8 years ago. And since then, the community has really flourished. while keeping a lot of the traditions that were part of the college intact. And it's just a wonderful place to be.
So I understand that a lot has changed in your life since show number 32 to show number 159. Where do you want to begin?
Okay. So in 2012, when I was here last, I was in the communication studies department here at UNC, finishing a PhD. And I had just started this wonky little dissertation that I was writing about
the craft. Did you all hear that wonky little dissertation?
About the craft beer industry. So since that time, I have finished that wonky dissertation, and it will now hopefully be a very polished book coming out in the next year or so. I have taken a faculty job, was teaching at a community college in Virginia for a while, and that's fantastic, hard, rewarding work for anybody who does it. Recently took my current position. I've also been writing fiction, so I have a novella out on the way in the fall, and doing a lot of fun stuff with beer. I've talked to a lot of, you know, people who are more interested in beer and how it's kind of working in culture. So I have to give a shout out to Dave Infante. He's a journalist who writes for Thrillist. An article that he just did about race and craft beer just won a James Beard Award.
Wow.
And I got to work with him on that, and that was fantastic.
Can you just share with us a takeaway message from that?
The takeaway message. It was a kind of, why is craft beer so non-diverse? And should we care? And assuming if we do,
what?
You know, what should we do about it? So it was a great article, and I'm really thankful to Dave for letting me work on it with him.
Well, you know, it's so funny. We say a few things around here, but doubt the default, okay? Doubt the default. What is the default position? Oh, it can't be right. That doesn't mean there's not a place for history and legacy and customs. Oh, no. Far from it. Mm-hmm. We always have our particular Courage cocktail brew here. Big secret is it's black tea. And that is just part of who we're being. And so I understand that. But listening to what you're saying and questioning, okay, maybe we can do this. Let's bring something better. Something's might need to vexing problems here. Let's make them a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So in that process, you kind of glossed over a few things, but I am not going to let you off the loop. This accomplished book that you will be bringing forth is from the Nebraska Press, University of Nebraska. It's changed a little bit since your dissertation.
A bit, yeah.
So you can talk to us about it.
Sure. So the book will be right now tentatively titled The Value of a Pint. And it's essentially, in the fancy parlance of academia, it is a cultural economy of the American brewing industry from Prohibition forward.
Darling.
For the rest of us.
Please do tell us. What does that mean?
It's a book about the way that we make beer valuable.
Ah, okay. So you are a prophetess, in case you don't know it.
Okay.
Because in show number 32, and we have the evidence here, we were talking about, okay, what's going on with this craft brew business? What specifically is it about ingredients? Is it about curiosity? And you were very fundamental in my understanding of the recipes. You told us a great story about the recipes for these beers. Do you remember that?
No, I don't. You have to remind me.
The recipe of the beers was always in women's work. It was always part of the bread making, the beer making, you know, child rearing. You know, it's, you know, for many of us, none of this has changed much. But for others, it's like, okay. But this beer making was really part of understanding, you know, this was their water source. This was how people stayed hydrated, and you were explaining that to us, and specifically in 2012, from what I can remember, it was the industry, the big beer industry, had kind of crushed the little guys, that little curiosity, those little voices, those flavors, that palate, and all of a sudden there's been a little opening. And that was because of places like Fifth Season up the street, where you could build your own brew and start experimenting with, wait a minute, this feels like beer, but it doesn't taste like anything I've ever had. And you predicted that that was going to go far, because people's sensitivities, their abilities to local food, you know, I want to know where my beer is made. I want to know why is there, one size does not fit all, especially when we're talking about things we put into our mouths. So you really have to spend a little bit of time about to us about things that had changed. But that dissertation, that intersection of food and culture, that's all connected to this.
I think in a way it's something that's been the same for a long time, and maybe the change is that we're becoming more aware. Because food, and including beer, it's our most direct connection to the environment around us. It's our most direct connection to the people around us. It is part of almost every social ritual that we have, from bar mitzvahs to breastfeeding a young to birthday parties to getting a beer after work. And I think what's happening is we're becoming more conscious of the ways that food is operating, and so we're being more intentional. And craft beer has just been wonderful because, you're right, experimentation has been part of it, since the kind of microbrew turn in the late 70s and 80s. And Mystery Brewing is such a great example because they're, that's a brewery that has a foundation built on experimentation. That's what Eric wanted to do when he first started out, and what they're still doing. And that they really encapsulate the spirit of kind of what it's all about.
And that is a perfect entree. We have got to introduce Anita Riley, who's been smiling sitting here in studio on mic. But before I even bring you in, I have to tell you, she is a pioneer. She's a home brewer, and then became very interested in this online component, Brewing Up a Storm, and that is focusing on women in the beer-making industry. You started out in Asheville, North Carolina, and you are a native North Carolinian, which you all will be able to hear. And the most important thing is this. You are also a Cicerone.
Cicerone.
A Cicerone. Ha ha ha. Do tell.
A beer server Cicerone. So this is the first level of what is equatable to the sommeliers for wine. We just operate in the beer world instead. And so it's all about learning proper serving technique, learning beer styles, learning off flavors, knowing what a beer should taste like, if it's stylistically correct, what the carbonation level should be, what the color should be, what kind of grains are in there, what kind of yeast should that be. So it's a lot of knowledge kind of under one blanket.
Having said that, what lured you from beautiful mountains of Asheville? Oh my gosh, it's just stunning out there. To beautiful Hillsboro.
Well, I really like eating crow. I had sworn that I would never leave Asheville. And so when you say something like that, inevitably you're going to be wrong. No, but it really was Mystery Brewing Company. And so I've got to go back and tame some rumors. I am not that seasoned in this industry. I started home brewing just in 2012, so not that long ago, and just started professionally at Mystery Brewing Company in January. It's my first job out of school, so I'm kind of really getting my feet wet, literally and figuratively.
You have to shout out here, because Jay and I are smiling at each other. This young lady, Anita, brewed something recently for another society we're going to talk about later in the program called the Pink Boots Society, and it was called, and ultimately, Field and Flowers,
yeah.
Or maybe Fields and Flowers. I really don't know where the S's were, but it was delicious.
Thank you.
And it was the cream rise to the top real fast.
Thank you. I cannot take full credit for that. It was a genuine collaboration, and we worked with about 20 different women from 7 different breweries and all over the brewing industry, a lot of folks that were behind the scenes for the first time that day. But we put out feelers about, hey, what do we want to make? And we got some great feedback and just tried to include all of those ideas into one recipe that worked. So thank you for saying that it worked so well.
Oh, it worked beautifully. Jay, remember when you were talking about mystery and Eric? Eric was on our program. He was the he paired a meal with Prodigal Farms, Prodigal Cheese, and he was doing the beer companions, and he's just coming out with his first book. I understand he's got a second book. But in that process, you know, we're learning a lot about experimenting and the culture that promotes that. How do we get there? How do we promote people making experiments, willingness to maybe some things are going to work, some things aren't going to work?
You know, I think it's funny because, you know, pursuant to the show, Courage Cocktail, yeah. Right, there's two sides, right? There's the habit of being courageous, and I certainly think it's a habit rather than necessarily just one individual choice. It's a history of choices, and the more you are enabled to experiment, the more you will. But I also think it has to do with your relationship with fear. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about craft beer, for all of its flaws and all of the things that are happening and all of its struggles, craft brew folks who I now kind of know coast to coast are some of the uniformly the most fearless people I know. You know, they will start up a brewery on a wing and a prayer and on a crowdfunding campaign, as was the case in Mystery. They will put flavors together that don't make any sense. They will, right, they'll just do. And that's fantastic. It's not always about, you have to make money, but they're willing to kind of put the bottom line aside for the sake of doing something really exciting. And when you have an entire industry that really actually embraces this ethos, you have magic. I mean, still, craft beer is one of the only major industries in the country that is actually diversifying instead of consolidating, right? More firms entering the market, more different products entering the market. Almost every other industry you see is collapsing, and craft beer is doing the opposite, and it's doing it explosively, and that's so exciting.
What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that Jay is absolutely correct. I mean, if I just go back and look at all of the people that I've met, it's such a diverse crowd, not just demographically, but everybody's a strong word. But almost everyone that I have met is on their second or third career. You know, no one woke up, you know, when they were a child and say, I want to be a brewer when I grow up. We came to this as adults for different reasons.
I don't know about
reasons,
that. Bill is laughing over there. You're going to have to come over.
Okay, maybe
mic,
Bill.
Come on over here.
But just in Mystery alone, we have a theater major. We have a scientist. We have a librarian. I was a photographer in my first career. And we all come with very different reasons to be there. And almost all of them have to do with, like, this lust for life and for exploring and for experimenting and what can I do next? And, hey, what if we tweak this a little bit? Can we make this a little better, you know? And just constantly trying to evolve in that way.
This is so, I hate to say it, prophetic, because exactly what Jay was saying, where these larger industries are all now consolidating. We had a huge merger with a large data company, and then Quintiles. Both companies are merging now into a multi-billion dollar deal, and they're doing it for economies of scales. They feel that maybe they'll consistently, that one, it's like left and right hand working together. I'm not sure if it's going to work, but I can see that there's this extraordinary word that when it's in my mouth, I kind of start feeling the tin. It's called scalability. Oh, man, I you know, at first I was drawn to its power, but scalability is what you hear in all sorts of startups, all sorts of news agencies now. Once we figure something out, can we replicate it? Can we go forward? And it kind of undermines the value of local. And Jay was describing with her work, there's nothing more intimate between ourselves, our communities, than our food and our drink. And I think you're seeing your people may have been not as explicitly aware of that value. So this group is a diverse group of backgrounds, kind of new beginnings, pivot people. People are saying, I'm in some form of transition. And they bring along with that all those kinds of things. But that's a great entree point because I need to understand, I know our listener will want to know, curious minds, how did you end up in making beer? Let's start with Anita. How did you get there?
Oh, so as I mentioned, I was in a photography career, and this last recession had a very deep impact on that industry. And I was really kind of trying to decide if at this point in my life, if the right move for me was to continue trying to come at it anew or to take on something different. And I really felt like it was time for me to move on to something different. And so I was looking at AB Tech because I knew I didn't have 4 years to devote to something. I really needed to just retool and get it done. And I was looking at their course offerings and nothing was really speaking to me. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until they announced this brewing program, I was like, that's it. That's it for me. Like this fits everything. As far as the people, it's a wonderful culture of people that are inside the brewing industry as far as being able to be technical and creative and to engage both sides of my brain in that way is something that's really important for me. If I had a desk job and it was all head work, I would go crazy. And if I was just doing grunt work and using my body all the time, I would go crazy. It just fits so many things. And at the same time, just looking at my community and having seen Asheville mostly boarded up in my childhood and having seen so many things that we did to try to bring in people to visit that area with tourism and development, the Biltmore is great. The mountains are beautiful. There's a lot of outdoor things to do. We have great art museums. But beer really kind of took all of those things and just brought everyone in. There's really great chefs now. There's so many things going on. And I can't say that it all had to do with beer. But that was something that I was like, yes, I want to be part of that because I see that as a way to revitalize this entire area. And going outside of Asheville, I now see that happening in almost every community that has a craft brewery. So it's really, I'm getting goosebumps. Like, this is what makes my heart sing.
I can see this. And okay, come on, Jay, tell us. How'd you get, you got to tell a story again because okay, there yeah. are new listeners
yeah,
out here.
So I'm trying to figure out which version of the story to tell.
Unedited. That's okay.
So I am still, have been homebrewing about 10 years now. It was a kind of snowballing passions, you know. It started when I was an undergrad in Blacksburg, Virginia. I was, like many undergrads, trying to make ends meet by picking up shifts in bars. And, you know, it's funny when you look back on it, right? Because at the time, the shift beer at the end of the shift was like this wonderful, awesome perk of working in a bar. But you realize you've had to clean broken glass out of urinals and, you know, all sorts of awful things have happened. And the shift beer is maybe not that valuable. But, so it started with me deciding that I was going to capitalize on that shift beer and drink the most expensive thing on tap. Because if I was going to get this free beer, it was going to be the best free beer. And I, you know, this is at a time where I didn't drink a lot of beer or correction, I didn't drink a lot of good beer. So that was kind of my orientation to tasting other things. And I went to the West Coast after undergrad, and this would have been like right around the turn of the millennium, 2001, 2002. And Southern California was just jumping off at that time. Stone was just like blowing everybody's minds, and Green Flash is out there. I mean, it really just was. The term I've come to use is yeasty. Like, it was just really yeasty out there. Things were so exciting. That's the first time I went to a beer festival during these years. And I was like, what is this amazing thing that's happening? And it was while I was out there that it just kind of, the seed was planted. I was like, I could try this. I could figure this out. And I think there's some people who dabble and they fall out. And then everybody else is obsessed. Right. You know, there's not a lot of middle ground with brewing, and that's where I was. And I think, you know, I am predominantly an academic, so I live in my head quite a lot.
Yes.
But beer was this way where I could play with those ideas that I hoard in my head, but express them. Because it's just one of the most flexible metaphors for everything. You know, fermentation, the alchemy of fermentation, right? The making of one from another, the kind of way that you can put four plus simple ingredients together and, you know, produce hundreds of different products. The way that you treat yeast will make them do different things. And it's, you know, you learn about environments and, you know, there's a nurturing there. I mean, I am embarrassed to say how many hours I stand in front of my fermentation fridge watching carboys bubble, but I do, because you have this relationship with this.
Come on, you can do it.
Right. And it's, you have to kind of also be a little hands off, because things will just happen. And sometimes they're happy accidents and sometimes they're not. But you can invest and see the product of your investment as well. Like, as technical as you want to be, you can be. Or as laissez-faire as you want to be, you can be. It just, you know, so for people who just have their creativity and thoughts and passions that want a place to land, beer is just this really incredible place to land.
I feel like I'm between two accomplished musicians, and their instruments happen to look like a brewery. But I got news for you. They're just singing and composing and playing this, all kinds of repertoires, all kinds of feelings. It's not, it's the same kind of, yeasty feeling that we get when we introduced Brenda Scott last week, you know, and playing her instrument. It's all about this expression. And yeah, there's this intellectual teamwork. We've got a ton. We're in the breeding ground. We have universities here. It's amazing. And people constantly build ideas, take them apart, build them up, take them apart. It's just part of who they are. I should say we are, because we're kind of sometimes supporting that. But when you said to us, Jay, how valuable it was to be able to leap out of that world and start doing something physical, something with your hands, with your body, with your taste. You know, the five senses inform our judgment. And I think that that's probably one of the biggest idioms that we have for all of our creative lives. As predicted, this time is going so fast. So I want the listener to stay tuned. We will come back. Both of our brewmasters are here. I am not letting them out the door. And when we return, we're going to pick it right up, and we're going to study something called the Pink Boot Society. Now, come on back to this dial, and when you do, we're going to learn a little bit more about that, and also really talking about why women make such great beer. So, stay tuned.
My daddy never was a drinking man. It didn't matter whether bottles or cans. He said we all have something that we must believe. And he tried to instill that in me. Well, I believe I'll have me a beer, 'cause it ain't sold in heaven, you gotta buy it right here. And you can't take it with you whenever you go. So I believe I'll drink all I can hold. Hey, that woman just tore me in two, but she's just one more reason I turn to the brew. You see, a beer's 10 times better whenever it's cold, and you can kill it before it grows old. So I believe I'll have me a beer, 'cause it ain't sold in heaven, you gotta buy it right here. And you can't take it with you
I'll drink all I can hold.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please visit our website, wcomfm.org. To make a financial contribution, sponsor your favorite show, or help support our many news, featured news and information programs, click the PayPal donate button on the top of our main page. Again, please visit our website, wcomfm.org, and thanks for listening to your community radio station.
'Cause I believe I'll have me a beer, 'cause it ain't sold in prison, you gotta drink it out here. And you can't take it with you whenever you go. So I believe I'll drink all I can hold. No, you can't take it with you whenever you go. So I believe I'll drink all I can hold.
And welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. You are listening to WCOM LPFM here in the heart of Carrboro, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Glad you could be with us today. We're really talking to people, two women who are craft beer makers, very accomplished ones, each one of them. And I wanted to set up a little bit of context here. I went out to North Carolina Beer Stats. There's great North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild. They bring it all together. And it's a shout out to Derek Miner over in Raleigh, who led me to them. And in my research, I discovered that indeed North Carolina, the state of craft beer, is doing just fine. Thank you very much. There's something like $1.2 billion industry, somewhere around the line of 10,000 jobs. Asheville seems to be taking a very serious role here with 20 breweries. And when we look at local ingredients, when we look at all kinds of this piece of this pie, gee whiz, Jay, you were right. The industry explodes. They absolutely exploded. And while we were listening to that delightful piece of music about beer, Anita and Jay and I were kind of off mic, and something fascinating came up. I said, we need to talk about what goes in a beer. And Anita, what was the most expensive piece of beer making?
Well, the most expensive ingredient in any beer is going to be the taxes. We pay a lot of taxes as craft brewers.
A lot of taxes. Well, that also means that in the early part of the show, in case you missed it, we were describing how these small craft breweries seem to be a place that bring community together. All of a sudden, no, I'm not going out of town to that bar. I'm going to stay home here, go downtown and learn more about my neighbor, learn more about what's going on in the town, how I can help. Maybe I can get a job. There's all kinds of things that carry on in a local brewery. And so we were describing it can be kind of a turnkey place. And part of that is the economy benefits because of the taxes, all that beer that's getting drunk. Wow. So beyond the taxes, let's talk about the real deal here with hops and waters and just kind of, I'm going to turn to Anita in this case. Anita, what is it that we need to make beer?
So if we're thinking about just the very basics of beer, it's usually water, hops, yeast, and barley, malted barley, or it could be other malted grains. And so that's primarily what we're looking at. But we also, because we like to experiment so much, we'll throw in some locally roasted coffee or some cocoa nibs or some flowers or local honey or it's endless. It's absolutely endless.
And Jay, what do you think about when you, over the course of, you've been making beer for 10 years now, you know, what is it that you like to play with? What's your favorite, like, oh, is my secret sauce ingredient?
Oh, gosh, that's so hard.
Oh, there are that many.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, I've always, I would say I run the conservative side. I tend to like to drink beer that's close to style. But, right, every once in a while, you do. You kind of get a wild hair, and you just are like, you know what? I want to play with something. So most recently, how about not favorite, but most recently, I was playing with tea and hibiscus flowers and just different kind of, like, I guess, more aromatic elements that maybe don't add a ton to flavor, but to aroma, which is a component of flavor. So it's going to present in your mouth anyway. But, you know, the experience of smelling beer is almost as great as drinking beer. And so I've been kind of playing with some of that stuff. And I will say right now I'm getting married in September. So I'm brewing the beers for my wedding. And
lovely.
That has been a lot of fun.
Best wishes.
Thank you.
That's exciting. So now you have an objective.
Yes.
We've got to get all this beer done. No experiments. We're going to go with what works. Mm-hmm. Now, when you come out with something like this, obviously you must want to make a very special brew for that very special day in your life. Can you reveal anything about these special brews?
So I can reveal that I did a stout last week.
Lovely.
That will have some additions that I won't reveal, but that we're doing a camping style wedding, so that will be lovely. Paired with s'mores. We're doing something I call it for the Coors Light crowd, but we'll do like an easy drinker that's, you know, just a nice session-y golden ale. There will be something for the hopheads because we've got a lot of them. We're going to think about that one too. That probably will have something fun attached to it. And then I have a ton of friends who are celiacs or don't have gluten, so I'm actually going to brew a cider for them.
Oh, lovely, lovely. That's a whole nother, you know, piece of this picture is that hops, I think, or there's gluten that's produced in beer, right?
From the barley.
And so ultimately, then those among us who can't really do much with gluten, ciders, that's going to be another show. Don't worry. Anita, when you recently made a beautiful brew for us, which... us, meaning the good people of Hillsborough, North Carolina. And if you're so lucky, I don't know how far it traveled, but we were in love with this brew, which was called Field and Flowers. Let's talk about what went into that brew and why you made it.
Okay, sure. So that was actually brewed for International Women's Collaboration Brew Day, which is a mouthful. Even the acronym is a mouthful. But that is a worldwide event where every day on Women's Day, women in the brewing industry get together and make beer. And so it's kind of like liturgy in the church where everyone across the world is doing the same thing on the same day, which is really great. And in our case, we paired with the Pink Boots Society. So this beer is a fundraiser for the Pink Boots Society, which is a professional development kind of support system for women in the brewing industry, and the fundraising goes toward scholarship funds that they give out to help get women in entering the field.
And that's significant because we're going to talk about what we need, you know, what advice you'd give for newbies. But before we do, that particular brew, you put some magical ingredients in that.
So
come
I was
on. Reveal.
So I was kind of the puppet master behind the scenes, you know, getting all these women together. And there, like I said, there was about 20 women from across the Triangle area and across the brewing and beer industry. And I said, hey, what do y'all want to make? And they came back and said, one woman wanted to use lemongrass and one woman wanted to use jasmine and one woman wanted to use blueberries. And I was like, well, who do I have to tell no? Because this is a lot of stuff. And then the more I thought about it, you know, I've had blueberry lemonade. I've had jasmine tea with lemon. These flavors aren't conflicting. We just need to make sure that we keep it all constrained, that nothing is overpowering anything else, and that they all play well together. So that's what we did, and we just kept the grain bill and the hop bill very, very light and just let those flavors sing for themselves.
And they did.
Thank you.
In fact, when you walked into studio, I think it was Bill who was like, okay, where can we get more? And I don't think there's much left.
There isn't much left. So the other breweries that we paired with was Full Steam in Durham, Bombshell in Fuquay-Varina, Holly Springs, and Clouds Brewing, also in Raleigh. And it went out to a few other accounts, people that participated in one way or the other but didn't have a tap room. And so we tried to get it close to their, you know, their local watering hole sort of a thing. I don't know how much of that is left. There's none left in our inventory except for just a couple of few cases of cans left. So you can get those at our pub house, and you can run to these other places to see if they still have it on tap.
Well, what was so interesting beyond the deliciousness of the Field and Flowers is that you actually put up the name for people to choose.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So, again, I wanted this to be a true collaboration. I did not want to be like a dictator and say, this is what we're doing, and you're going to call it this. I really wanted the women that were involved to be involved. And so we asked people to come with a name for this beer. Once we had a recipe down and we knew what we were making, okay, now name it. And they did. We had, I should have taken a picture of it to show you, but we had like 20 different names that were possibilities. And we just wrote them down and put them inside the office. And during the brew day, women kind of snuck in there. It was like a voting booth. And they put a little check mark by the one they wanted. And Field and Flower won. And that was from Lara Murphy, who is with Modern Romance Brewing, which is a brewery and planning
Modern Romance. well we learning, we're getting all of this information. We know about the Pink Boot Society now, and particularly its emphasis on putting resources together for scholarships, because really that's getting there. You just don't happen to jump into this industry. This is highly vetted, highly curated content. And it takes time and commitment. So, yeah, I see tuition. I see scholarships. I wonder if when you are comfortable here, looking back, I know that's scary, but what advice would you give a young or a person, new person getting into this business? What would you think about?
I would just say, do it. Just do it. There, whatever you have in your mind that's keeping you from doing this, just get over yourself and do it. There is nothing and no reason why you shouldn't. I was really worried about the investment for my homebrew equipment until I went to the homebrew shop and saw how inexpensive it really can be. I was worried about going back to school in my 30s because everybody was going to be younger than me and I was not the youngest person in the room. I was worried about being a woman going into a very male-dominated field, and I have found the most hospitable men. And I have found a lot of women in here, so I can't think of a reason not to.
So it sounds like you should run. If you're thinking about doing this, run into it.
Just do it.
Jay, what do you think when you look back? I know, you serendipitously or were working in this. I guess they call it the, what is it, that beer that you were talking about? It was the, when you were working at a bar and they gave you
the shift beer.
Mm-hmm. What would you give as advice?
The very first thing that comes to my head is not exciting. I just say clean.
Clean.
Brewing is a process that is about microbes. And in fact, what you are trying to do is create the world's most perfect environment for microbes to reproduce and grow. But you only want certain microbes, not others. So the cleaner you work, the better the product will be. That, however, is not very exciting advice.
Oh, but it's for real. I could see why it leads to your success.
Yeah. But I also would say drink a lot and copy what you drink. I think a lot of people, I don't want to mimic, I don't want to make clones. This is kind of the term we throw around, homebrew cloning, commercial beers. But those people have successful brews for a reason, right? And it's a really good resource. You can walk into any bottle shop and be surrounded with tremendous examples of anything you want to brew. Grab it, drink it, enjoy it, copy it, and you learn really fast.
When you were describing in great detail about how valuable the scents are and how aromatic, and you were adding flowers so your nose could kind of enjoy it as much as your palate, you just sounded to me so much like a wine person. So let's, maybe there's a little bit of synergy here. We approach or apprehend the wine world, the word sommelier, with a certain degree of fancy schmancy, swanky, oh, this is kind of, you know, oh, this is going to be expensive. And yet what I'm hearing, and I know what I know in learning about researching this stuff, is that you have equivalent knowledge base, but wrapped up in this delightful denim, mm-hmm. just this very casual, easy, approachable stuff. And I wonder if that undermines in some ways the seriousness of what it means to be a Cicerone, you know, what it means to, you know, to understand all that's involved there.
I don't think that that's been my experience. So I started out as a beer buyer in a wine shop. And so, you know, especially when I was like, hey, with my bosses, John and Gina at Metro Wines, they, you know, kind of tasked me with bringing in beer. And I did that. And they were like, well, what kind of element is it going to attract? It's like really great people, really, really yeah. great people, you know? And so it's, I think that beer, the Budweisers, the Miller Coors, the Macros of this world, I think that those beer drinkers have a certain stigma attached to them. I don't see that same sort of stigma within the craft beer industry. I think that people that are in the craft beer industry turn away from snobbery, like the sommelier kind of tightly tied tie. Sort of
say that three times. A tightly tied tie. You betcha, Anita.
But I think that there's a huge appreciation for the product that's in front of us, mm-hmm. and the enjoyment around the table about that.
Are we growing more sophisticated, Jay? Are we in a great way, in a more nuanced way? Our expectations kind of exploding now. Well, I've had so much better beer somewhere else, or. How does that shape what's going on in the industry?
I think it's obviously pushing the industry to grow. And I think like every other industry, there's always going to be ebbs and flows and fads. You know, we're still very hooked on the American IPA right now. I think a lot of brewers want to expand and make more styles and kind of break the tyranny of the IPA. By and large, mm-hmm. I do think we're, you know, if not growing more sophisticated, growing more adventurous. I think that's a good thing no matter what.
So you know, I'm going to ask you a big, big, big question here. What's your favorite beer to drink? Oh, no, they're both like standing back like, don't do this to me, Lee. I really didn't mean that as a sneaky punch here.
So the reason I do it is because people are like, so you're a beer snob? And I said, no, I'm a beer aficionado. Oh. The snob will exclude. I am equal access, you know. Yeah. So, you know, to be honest, if I'm mowing my lawn, I would love a cold PBR. It's delicious when I'm mowing my lawn. But if I want to sit down and have food, that's not what I'm going to choose. Beer drinking is always deeply environmental. Uh-huh. If it's hot, if it's a certain ambiance, if I'm eating certain food, if it's humid, my beer choices are always, you know,
linked intimately to what's around you.
So today, I'm looking out the window of your beautiful studio, and it's cool and it's sunny. I mean, if you're not in Carborough, I'm sorry. It's a beautiful day here. And if I were going to be sitting outside drinking a beer, I probably would pick up, a pepper IPA today, because I love a citrusy IPA that has a little bit of bite on it. That's delicious.
Wow. All right. Come on, Anita. Tell us what's on your mind.
I can't say anything very different. I drink.
You've never met before.
I'm the person that the servers hate because they ask me what I want to drink before they ask me what I want to eat. And I can't do that. I have to decide what I'm going to eat and then pair the beverage to
Are
go with
you
that.
Listening out there, world of restaurateurs? You're getting it wrong. You've got it backwards. So the food comes first, then the beer.
Right, because I could pick out a wine or a beer or even a soda, and then if it doesn't go with what I want to eat, then I'm going to have to send it back and get something different. So I'm a backwards person, perhaps, but that's how I roll. I'm also very seasonal. You know, I love dark beers in the winter. I love light beers in the spring and summer. I go back and forth. I will say that I absolutely adore a well-made saison. And so that's one of those things that whether I'm eating food or not, whether it's hot or not, that's one that I will go back to over and over again.
A saison.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't even know what that means. But now I'm going to pretend when I go to a pub somewhere and say, I want a well-made saison. And they'll look at me like, wow. Maybe. Maybe not. I often don't carry off these things very well. Too transparent. I know that we opened the show. I was kind of telling you all about and telling our listeners how welcoming we are. I loved what you said. We don't exclude. We really find pathways in to bring closer. Can you just speak to a little bit about what's going on in European markets at all and what's happening in that world? Is this an American-only trend? No. Okay, good to know.
No. So, you know, disclaimer, I don't do a ton of comparative work. American industry is my wheelhouse. But you see a fairly comparable, like, real ale craft movement in the UK. And although it's a little different than ours, because they have that kind of tradition of real cask ales. And so we do casking here to some degree, but it's a different type of craft movement, but it still exists. You see a lot of American craft brewers now kind of stepping overseas, you know, and trying their hand. You know, Stone's in Berlin now. And you see, actually, there's an interesting kind of thing going on in Africa, particularly South Africa. Although SEB Miller has been there forever doing big beer, but there is a flourishing craft industry in Africa right now. So there's pockets kind of popping up everywhere. And I do think maybe this is a really interesting frontier of craft beer. You have like BrewDog out of Scotland. Just you're starting to see more collaborations between American breweries and breweries overseas producing collaboration beers. And that's a really exciting idea that we actually might have this kind of international exchange of ideas and flavors and not just because we've done a lot of, Americans have done of making other styles of other parts in the world, but this is different, right? This is new and creation and finding kind of new pathways to connect up.
Well, I think that we've kind of seen this cycle where we've got Americans that have gone overseas and been inspired by what they drank there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So they brought this back, created this amazing craft beer industry around Belgian and German and English and Australian influence, and then those people from those countries come here and see what Americans are doing, and kind of, because we aren't trapped by the rules of our culture. We don't have a beer culture.
Not yet. We're working on it.
We are working toward that, but it isn't there yet. And so we're kind of, well, what are the rules? Well, there are no rules. Let's just do what we want. And so now people from overseas are coming here and seeing that and taking that sort of spirit back with them. And so it's really interesting how there is like this world dialogue in the craft beer industry.
And I can't help but say it's so closely and it's on the same harmonic as these startup cultures. Everything you've said to me, I've heard, I felt, I've witnessed with these startup cultures. The startup grind here is now from Google, is down here with Mark Bavasotto. There's all kinds of things. There's tons of people, Adam Klein. We have a history of this, experimenting, bringing people into a community, seeing what an incubator is about, moving forward, some ideas making it A lot of ideas not making it, but still the lessons are had. And yes, that's the background music of downtown Carrboro. Not that we hear it a lot, but I want to thank you. Are there any final thoughts about what in the world we're doing? What in the world you can say about why you love beer?
It's delicious.
Perfect. Jay, come on now.
about why I love beer. You know, delicious really covers a lot of it. I've said this before, but to other folks when I talk about it. And they're kind of like, you believe in craft beer in ways that people would probably find irrational, right? Because I do think it's got the kind of energy and empowerment to actually do things like social justice work. And they're kind, you know, a lot of people are like, what? Why are you connecting these two ideas? And I kind of say, why not?
Right.
You know, and maybe that's one of the biggest, most wonderful things about beer, because it's like every time you pick one up, it's like, why not?
Why not? Oh, I think that's great. I'm so glad you could come. I'm so grateful for the both of you. I'm so happy that you two have met here for the first time in studio. Could have fooled me. It sounds to me like you guys are the same education. I also want to shout out and thank you, the listener. You know, you've been with us for many, many years now, and we've changed. We've had all kinds of great programs on, but it's always delightful to have an alumna come on back and speak to what she's learned and how she's grown. I appreciate the shout out about courage. Courage takes a lot to stay moving. You got to sometimes keep on moving, and I appreciate that. And Anita, you're going to come back to us. There's no question. So I want to thank our underwriter, the North Carolina State EEED grant. What were they and how are they involved? They've helped this program by underwriting our work for the advancement of women entrepreneurs, known belovedly as AWE, that's AWE, Raleigh. And I want to thank them for underwriting this program. I also want to thank Bill for the wonderful work of being the soundboard engineer. And again, WCOM LPFM, Carrboro, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. You bring the lunch and I'll bring the courage cocktail. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
What is the malted liquor? What gets you drunker quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer!
Can't get enough of it.
Beer!
How we really love it.
Beer!
Makes me think I'm a man.
Beer!
I could kiss and hug it.
Beer!
But I'd rather chuck it.
Beer!
Got my belly out to here.
Beer!
I could not refuse it.
Beer!
I could really use a beer.
Beer! Beer! Beer!
Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer!
I can't remember how much I have had. I drank a 12-pack with my dad.
That's my son, the drunken manly stud. I'm proud to be his bud.
Here, have some pretzels.
No, I'll call it quits. Those things give me the schlitz.
Drink with your family. Drink it with your friends.
Drink till your fat stomach distends.
Beer is liquid bread. It's good for you.
We like to drink till we spew.
Ooh, who cares if we get fat? I'll drink to that.
As we sing once more.
What is the malted liquor? What gets you drunker quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer!
Can't get enough of it.
Beer!
How we really love it.
Beer!
Makes me think I'm a man.
Beer!
I could kiss and hug it.
Beer!
But I'd rather chug it.
Beer!
Got my belly out to here.
Beer!
Golly, I adore it.
Beer!
Come on, damn it, pour it. Do it for me. Brew it for me. Beat it to me. Speed